Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And this week we've been reading Spring by Ali Smith. But first, some book news and more prizes. So this week the Pulitzer Prize winners were announced. And just on the fiction side, the winner was The Overstory by Richard Powers, which was on our radar. I think it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize in 2018.
Okay.
And I nearly read it. It's quite long. It's about 600 pages. And so I didn't quite get to it. But it's apparently this very intricate, beautiful story that is structured like a tree, and it involves trees within the story, but it's layered like a tree from the perhaps the roots, the trunk, the branches. I'm not sure.
Right, sounds interesting.
But it sounds interesting in form, but also apparently it's a beautiful book to read. So it's on my radar when I have time for another 600 page book. But that's seems to be a worthy winner.
Maybe a Christmas holiday read or something.
Yeah,
perhaps.
That's a good idea. Mm. And the other finalists were The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay, which we read and discussed with Rebecca, which was a wonderful book, and They're There by Tommy Orange, which we did recently.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah. Mm. And also in other news, there was a PricewaterhouseCoopers report. This is in the UK, but hopefully the trend is similar in Australia on retail. And it's not all good news. In generally, retail has been declining, and they looked at the number of store closures in the high street. And overall, there were in 2018, there was the highest number of store closures yet. I think it was a record year, but bookshops are growing. So
great news.
Yeah, I think so.
Great news.
Yeah, that's right. It's a growth area.
Yes.
And there were more openings of new bookstores than closures. And it's quite an interesting read in terms of what is working on high streets at the moment. And they're finding more, it's less stores, but more things like gyms, sports clubs, ice cream parlours.
Oh, really?
Okay. And cake shops. Oh. So, yeah, a bit of a mix.
That's surprising.
Mm. Mm.
I guess you can't buy ice cream online, can you? Or go to the gym online.
Yeah, that's true. So that was interesting. And as we go live, I think it'll be close to the 29th of April when the Women's Prize shortlist is being announced. So I've just been having a look at the long list, and we've actually, between the three of us, read a lot of the books, not all
great,
of them.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I have a good sense of it this year, and some of them have been great reads. So I thought I'd give my tips. And
good
just,
idea.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, but, go for it,
Anna. I actually don't know if it's about six books, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I think The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker will be on the shortlist, which is the retelling of the Trojan War from the women's point of view, Briseis's point of view. Remembered by Yvonne Battle Felton, which I haven't read, but some people have been raving about this book.
Oh, really?
Okay. And so it's piqued my interest, and it could well be on the shortlist. Milkman by Anna Burns.
That'll be on there, surely.
I think so. But I think they also look at accessibility for the Women's Prize.
Really? Okay.
And it's not the most accessible book on the long list. Praise Song for Butterflies by Bernice McFadden. This is another one I haven't read, and I've just seen people talk about, so I'm intrigued by that one. Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss, which Annie and I did recently and thought that was really excellent book. And Normal People by Sally Rooney, which was Annie's tip for the Booker, I believe, last year.
Everyone I know who's read that really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed it. And it's also, it's accessible.
Yes.
Definitely.
So that ticks a few boxes, I think. So that will be to be reviewed. Probably our listeners will know by now, by the time they're listening, what the shortlist is. And then we can perhaps if there are one or two on the short list that we haven't yet read, that might prompt us to pick those up. So that's always good. And on to our book of the week, Spring by Ali Smith, who herself is a former winner of the Women's Prize with her book How to Be Both. This Spring is the third, as you mentioned, yes, in the seasonal quartet that Ali Smith began writing in about 2017. And Amanda and I have read Autumn, the first one, and Winter, the second one, which we discussed in episode 18 mm-hmm. of the podcast. And we also revisited it in episode 41 when we did our best of 2018.
Oh, that's right.
And so we are really immersed in the Ali Smith seasonal quartet. But we have already just talked about Ali Smith, but to recap, because, you know, in case you weren't tuning in to episode 18. Ali Smith is a Scottish author and she's also a playwright and an academic. She lives in Cambridge and she also is a journalist and she does some wonderful non-fiction pieces. I remember we talked about last time a speech that she gave at the Goldsmiths Award at Goldsmiths University, which was wonderful. It was all about the importance of the novel. Sebastian Barry has described her as Scotland's Nobel laureate in waiting.
That's right. So
she has that's her stature really in the industry. She's so highly regarded and she's just a real thinker as well as being a very highly esteemed novelist. So How to Be Both, she's written many short stories and novels and plays, but How to Be Both was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize and won the Bailey's Prize, the Goldsmiths Prize and the Costa Book Awards for the novel category in, I think, 2014. And then she began her seasonal quartet with Autumn, which was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Mm-hmm. And then Winter and now Spring, which has just been released. And in the UK, it is Spring. So it's very much, I always feel like I wish I was reading this in season.
Yes. Yeah.
But never mind. We just couldn't wait that long in Australia. So it is it's really weaving together two stories. So we have Richard, who's was a successful film producer, and he's reflecting back on his life. He has an imaginary daughter because he's been separated from his real daughter, but he talks to his imaginary daughter, or she talks to him, and she sort of keeps it real,
yes,
and keeps him in touch with, you know, the younger generation. He's travelling north, so we sort of meet him on a train platform and he's thinking about his friendship with Paddy, who was a script writer that he worked with for many years and who has died recently. And she was very bright, more intelligent than him. And there's a wonderful sense of fun between them and their dialogue where, you know, you can tell he's the sort of successful film producer who's not very academic. And she sort of is so enthusiastic about all these authors and artists that she loves.
She's like a walking encyclopedia.
She is.
And but she's not patronising towards him.
No, she just wants to bring him in and get him enthused about the things that she loves. So there's wonderful dialogue that he's looking back on. And they discuss Catherine Mansfield and how her path crossed with Rilke, the poet, in the 1920s in Switzerland, but not in a pretentious way, but it's just really good fun. And then we meet Brit, which is short for Brittany, and I think very cleverly named because Brittany is spelt in her name like the region of France, but of course it's also like Britain.
Yes.
And so I feel like it's Ali Smith commenting on how close England is with Europe in that just very, very subtle, clever way. But she calls herself Brit. She's working in a detention centre and she becomes part of the system there. So she's being sort of sucked into that vortex of just being a mindless
machine. Yeah, she's
into the
to,
machine. Yeah. That's right. And then she follows a girl called Florence, and because of that, her path might change or her life might change. And it's also been the book has been described as a riff on the Shakespeare play Pericles, Prince of Tyre. And in that play, I'm not familiar with it, but I don't feel bad about that, because I think it is one of the more obscure ones, or certainly one of the less performed plays. And it's a sort of famously messy play. Yes. So,
and there is a question mark whether it was entirely authored by Shakespeare. In any case.
Yeah, there is. But nevertheless, I think Ali Smith has drawn on that, and it does have a character, Pericles, who's separated from his wife and daughter, who goes on a journey. It brings in the idea of refugees, because he's living in, I think, Lebanon or the Middle East, and travels, and he has a crest which says, "In hope I live," which is this idea of spring. And she's, I think, trying to bring in the theme of hope into her Brexit quartet amongst the politics. And she does refer to some politics in her very witty way. What did you think, Amanda?
I, like the other two in the seasonal quartet, I really, really enjoyed it. I would have to say, I think, so far, Winter has been my favourite because of the character Lux.
Yeah.
But overall, I loved it. I couldn't put it down. I read it really quickly. In the true Ali Smith style, she makes so many references to current events. It's written in, it has a sense of urgency. That's how I felt. She's commenting on Brexit and the Windrush and, you know, just everything that's happening, mainly in Britain, but also in the US as well.
And but you can also draw parallels, can't
absolutely.
You, with Australia as well.
Well, I think the main theme in this book is immigration, detention centres, how these people are treated and how they're kind of hidden from the public view.
Yes. That's a good point, actually. Yeah. We don't see inside those detention centres.
And they're given names like The Woods, I think the one that Brit works in, that makes it sound, you know, like it's a beautiful refuge, but in fact it's quite brutal inside.
Yeah. They call it like a processing centre.
Yes.
Or they refuse to call it a prison, but they call it what it is.
Oh, yes, they do. And they have all these acronyms that make it just all confusing. And so you don't quite know who does what and where they're working, and
it's like they're hiding behind the language.
Yeah, very much. I think back to the point about hope that Anna made, I read an interview with Ali Smith, and she was asked about that point, you know, where should we look for signs of hope? And her response was that the upcoming generation of young people are full of energy and spirit. They're on the streets with placards about a world and a future they're determined not to let the selfish generations cheat them of. So for her, the hope is in the youth of today.
And that would be the character Florence.
Florence,
would
the
represent
young
that.
12 or 14, whatever she was.
The precocious young girl.
Yeah, sort of almost a supernatural character, wasn't she? The other thing that was interesting too about Ali Smith is she's been involved in a project called The Refugee Tales, and that is a collaboration between authors who interview asylum seekers and refugees, and then they publish their stories anonymously, and that's been hugely successful. So Ali Smith is obviously very interested in that sense of justice and, you know, correct treatment of people seeking asylum in the US.
And I read somewhere that she has drawn from that experience so that the details in the book, even though she does it with such a light touch and she really is more about telling us a story, there are some confronting details, and I gather that they're very much drawn from her firsthand stories that she's heard or seen. So it does have that authenticity. It's interesting because Annie and I were just reading Lost Children Archive by Valeria Luiselli, which also has a detention centre theme, or that's one of the elements of the book, and is certainly something the author's very troubled by, and sort of on the US-Mexico border.
Right.
And then I'm currently reading, which I think we're doing for the podcast, No Friend But the Mountains.
Oh, yes.
Which is written from Manus Island, which is where Australia processes asylum seekers. So unfortunately it's a not just limited to Britain, this concern.
No. Mm. But also I think it's, I guess, a hopeful thing that it's been raised now in the public consciousness.
Yeah. Well, and that's what someone said when Ali Smith first began her seasonal quartet. Someone said, we're so lucky. And it was someone who was troubled by Brexit and everything that was happening in Britain, but they said, we're so lucky to have Ali Smith commenting on these times because she does it in such a clever way, but it also makes it enjoyable. It's just a joy to read her work. So I loved this as well. I really love her writing style and the vitality of her writing. So that, as you say, you race through it, and I was the same. I immediately was drawn into it, and she she has the play on words, so she has fun with it, but she never overdoes that. It never feels gimmicky, and I think we've talked about that with Winter as well.
Yes, and there are a lot of, I think, maybe slightly esoteric references in there, but if you don't get them, it doesn't really matter.
No.
It doesn't spoil the story.
No.
You're not thinking, oh, what's that about?
No, and you never feel like it's her being pretentious with that either.
I just don't think she is.
No.
I think she's just got this amazing brain that can process so many things all at once, and
exactly,
and that's how she writes.
But she does it in a way, like the references to, say, Catherine Mansfield, who I am aware of. I haven't read. I will actually now go back and read more of her. But she was a very, very good short story writer. Who Virginia Woolf, for example, loved her work. You know, and she was always jealous of her, I believe. But you know, you may not have heard of her necessarily, and yet the way Ali Smith writes about her is having Paddy, who's so super enthusiastic, telling Richard, who's never heard of her. So you completely, as a reader, can feel comfortable that maybe it's someone a bit obscure. But Paddy actually brings Catherine Mansfield to life as a character.
And she
sort of talks about, well, she had tuberculosis and she was in the hotel, as if she would have really wanted to meet Rilke. Or, you know, like she makes it a fun story, and rather than, and it does. It's not academic at all, the way she does that. So I love that.
Yian Lee was also very influenced by Catherine Mansfield.
Yes.
So writers obviously
know about her.
If
you're in the know,
The other thing I like about Spring, or all of her Ali Smith's books, but in this one in particular, I think where the story comes to life is in the relationships between the characters. So Anna's referred to Richard and Paddy. And in fact, if I could say one slightly negative thing about the book, it would be that when Paddy dies and Richard's alone, he falls a bit flat for me. But that's possibly intentional, because he is depressed. And
I think he is. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And the other relationship is between Brit and Florence. They kind of spar.
Yeah.
And Florence is described as a good person. Brit sees that, and Florence, this young girl, opens Brit's eyes in a way, doesn't she? Because Brit's sort of stuck in this machine, in this system, and just trudges off to work every day and doesn't appear to think a lot about what she's doing until she meets Florence, who talks about it from the other perspective, or another perspective.
Yeah, and I loved Brit actually, because Ali Smith gives you a sense of who Brit was, and she was someone who was very bright and didn't have the chance to go to university because of family circumstances. And so she could be any number of young people in the UK, and she just has to get a job, some sort of job, and this is the job that's offered to her, is to work in the detention centre. So she actually brings you in to feel empathy for the sort of person who could end up being a prison guard or being part of that machine, who normally you may not have much sympathy for, because you'd think, well, they're just a cruel bully, or they're
some of her colleagues were.
Yes. Yeah. But it just gives you a bit more of an insight, I think, into how that happens, I suppose, and how easily that can happen. And again, you can extrapolate from that one detention centre to all sorts of times throughout history where people have been sucked into the machine of what their government is telling them to do, that they stop thinking for themselves and are sort of mindlessly cruel without perhaps being bad people. in the beginning.
Yeah, they're just going through the motions in a sense.
And Florence is that wake-up call and, again, represents the younger generation saying, you know, wake up to yourself.
We want a different future.
Yeah.
And the other thing that, back to the relationships, she also is quite funny. when Patty dies, Richard has some email correspondence with her twin sons and they don't get along all that well, and they're talking about the funeral and and the one of the twins signs the email off VBW.
Yeah.
And Richard thinks, oh, what does that mean? Very big wanker. Yeah. He comes up with.
They're just real lads, aren't they, those boys? And he's saying, I'd really like to read this special poem. And they say, oh, cheers, Richard. Thanks so much. We're actually tight for time and we're not going to fit that in, but love your input. And, you know, they're just completely.
Just brush him off.
Yeah. So there's lots of humour. And I actually love how she mixes the fun and the serious elements of the story. So you have all of her wittiness and her humour and her playfulness and the fun that you find in her writing, but then she'll have a character who says to Richard, you know, wake up. He says something about, oh, the kids now are much better off, aren't they? And they say, wake up to yourself, Richard. Look around the world, and kids on trains, kids in detention centres, kids being trafficked, and there's a whole page of
interesting,
it. Really hard-hitting.
I wonder if we picked the same
kids
page.
Of all ages.
Oh, yes, we have.
Who are filmed and swapped and filmed again. Thousands of kids who don't know where their parents are right now. In these days you've just called better in the world. Kids by themselves all over this country who get here by crossing the world then just disappear. And not forgetting the hundreds of thousands of kids born and living here, surviving on God knows what, on air, in a whole new version of the same old British poverty. And there's just this wonderful, it's only one page, but very hard-hitting but also very readable, if you know what I mean, that she mixes in, and that's a wake-up call for Richard and just to get him a bit out of thinking about himself all the time, I suppose. All of that, and then you have Ali Smith's just occasionally she'll just put something that's very thought-provoking and it's done in a minimal way, but you have the benefit of her, as you say, you know, her brain that just has so much to offer. And there's one section where one of the characters is thinking about Florence and they actually say in the book, you know, she's almost like someone from a story that's not real life, but one of those stories that help you understand more about real life than anything else or something just really thought-provoking about what a story can do or what a novel can do just in amongst it all. But again, very lightly done.
The other thing she does as a unifying theme, I think, between the three books we've read so far is she chooses a visual artist and weaves their life into the story a little bit.
Yeah.
She did that with, is it
Tacita Dean?
Yes. She is a visual artist, photographer, filmmaker. And in fact, on the inside of the back cover, there's a beautiful picture of a cloud that she's done. And I think she's also always chosen women, I believe, women artists. So that's a really nice theme because she only puts a little bit of information. She sprinkles it throughout the books, but it makes you want to go and find out a bit more about these particular artists.
It does. And it just adds that element of hope, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's why it's in there.
Yeah, amongst the darkness, people are still creating beautiful art and you can take a lot from that.
Yeah, and it makes you think. So I think she likes that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. So, no, another wonderful read by Ali Smith, which we highly recommend. Yes. And I don't think you need to read them in any order. This is just happens to be the third season, but you could go back and start with Autumn or you could pick up Spring, I think, quite easily.
They're different characters. Mm. It's really the themes that unite them rather than the characters.
Yeah. Mm. So, no, I loved that. That was Spring by Ali Smith. And next week, Annie and I will be back reading Flames with special guest Sean Mooney.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we're really excited. We're doing a buddy read with Sean. There's a risk he may bail on the book if he's Did famously,
he select it or did you?
I think we all did. I can't remember. But he famously does bail if he's not enjoying a book, which I fully support. Mm. And then the week after that, Amanda and I are back with The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone by Felicity McLean.
Mm. That'd be interesting, I think.
Which is an Australian, it's been described as a sort of new picnic at Hanging Rock for the younger generation, I think. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Litzy, Twitter and Instagram at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I am on Instagram at Amanda L. Hayes 99.
Wonderful. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.